You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
Who knew that anti-gay baking or bakers was a thing? Or anti-gay florists? We only found out about anti-gay bakers and florists after marriage equality came to all 50 states. There is one particular anti-gay baker, Masterpiece Cake Shop in Colorado, that is now world famous because their case landed before the Supreme Court. Masterpiece Cake Shop denied a wedding cake to a same-sex couple. They sued. Colorado Civil Rights Commission said the Masterpiece Cake Shop was in the wrong. And yesterday, the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the anti-gay bakers. There's no denying that yesterday's Supreme Court ruling in favor of anti-gay cake baking was a morale booster for opponents of LGBT civil equality everywhere. You only had to look at Twitter for a split second to realize that. Justice Kennedy, who wrote the majority decisions in every major pro-gay rights case over the last 25 years, Romer, Lawrence, Windsor, Obergefell, he wrote yesterday's decision. Not Alito, not Thomas, not Gorsuch, but saving grace, silver lining, the decision was quote-unquote narrow, as everyone keeps saying, meaning it was decided on procedural-ish grounds. Take it away, National Center for Lesbian Rights. Today's Supreme Court decision in Masterpiece Cake Shop is a narrow, fact-based decision that does not break any new constitutional ground or create any new exemptions to anti-discrimination laws. The court reversed the state court decision only because it found that the record in this case indicated that the Colorado Commission's deliberations were tainted by anti-religious hostility. Today's decision leaves intact the long-standing principle that states can require businesses open to the public to serve everyone, even when some businesses believe that doing so violates their religious beliefs. All right. How long that principle remains intact depends on how long conservative but usually pro-LGBT civil equality Kennedy, age 81, remains on the court, along with 85-year-old liberal justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who dissented from Kennedy's decision yesterday, and 79-year-old Stephen Breyer, liberal justice, who voted with the majority in the Masterpiece Cake Shop decision yesterday. If Donald J. fucking Trump gets to replace any of these three justices with another Alito, Gorsuch, Thomas, Roberts, we can kiss that long-standing principle that states can require businesses open to the public to serve everyone goodbye. Along with the woman's right to choose, what little is left of labor rights in this country, what little is left of voting rights in this country, what little is left of environmental regulations in this country, the religious right, along with the entire GOP political and media establishment, they lined the fuck up behind Donald Trump once he got the nomination because they wanted the courts, and they didn't care who handed the courts to them. The right is not obsessed with purity. Look to evangelicals and their support to Donald Trump. No, no, no. The right is obsessed with power. Just enough people on the left, however, are obsessed with purity. So in addition to listening to voices on the left insist that there was no difference between Gore and Bush, no difference between Clinton and Trump, we were told that Hillary was the real warmonger, that Hillary didn't support same-sex marriage early enough, and that securing a liberal majority on the Supreme Court for decades to come, yeah, that wasn't a good enough reason to vote for Hillary Clinton. So here we are, praying that Ginsburg, Breyer, and Kennedy live forever. Not everyone on the left learned the lesson of 2000. The lesser of two evils is, you know, less evil, and maybe less evil deserves your vote. But here's hoping everyone on the left got the message in 2016. Time will tell whether we learned that particular lesson too late. Footnote. Important to emphasize, religious bigots who run businesses that are open to the public did not get the okay to deny services to LGBT members of the public nationwide. It is, however, currently legal for businesses to discriminate against LGBT people in 28 states. Could wind up being legal in all 50 if Donald Trump puts one more justice on the Supreme Court. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, the for free Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long, twice as many questions, and no ads, Evan Urquhart from Slate joins us to talk about trans issues. All that coming up on today's show. This episode is brought to you by Hims, the one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. Get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 by going to forhims.com/savage. This episode is brought to you by Movement Watches. Good-looking watches, bracelets, sunglasses, and gifts at great prices. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to mvmt.com/savage. Hashtag open. Love the players. Change the game. Get ready for a new inclusive approach to social networking and modern dating. Hashtag open welcomes you as you are. Define and redefine yourself in terms that work for you. Choose your own labels or choose no labels at all. Browse solo, with a partner, or both, all from the same phone. Hashtag open needs Savage Love listeners to test their app before they come out to the rest of the world. Test now at hashtagopen.com and earn community founder status for life. Let me be me, and you can be you at hashtag open.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 28-year-old straight woman from New York, and I wanted to ask you your opinion about a situation I'm currently in with my ex. We had a pretty messy breakup. After almost a year, he told me that he didn't want to be in a serious relationship with me, so I ended things with him because I wanted to be exclusive and saw a future together, but he didn't. Then, after I ended things, he continued to talk to me and has since wanted to get back together multiple times. Each time I've told him that I don't think we're good for each other romantically. There's way too much heartbreak and drama, but I'd potentially like to be friends and in each other's lives in the future. We have a lot in common, have great conversations, and despite the messiness of our breakup, I think he's a really great person. He reached out a few weeks ago saying that he wanted to start to hang out as friends, but when I responded that I'm not there yet and need a little bit more time, he responded that in a nutshell, I should know that it's all fake and that he'll always love me and he's only pretending to want my friendship forever. Lately, I've been thinking a lot about him. I really can't stop. It's a problem. And I'm debating getting in touch. Do you think this is a terrible idea that will lead to further awfulness and hurt on both sides? Or should I just kind of give it a go?
I guess I'm a little confused because before the breakup, you could see this guy as a potential long-term partner, someone that you could build a life with, and he wasn't ready to commit. He wasn't ready to be exclusive. He couldn't picture that future that you could picture. So you broke up with him, and suddenly, as is sometimes the case, as is often the case, he can see that future, the future he's missing out on now, potentially by not being willing to commit to you, basically on your schedule. And he's come to his senses, but now you're not sure if you'd get back together with him because because ulterior motive, because he wants to be with you now in the way you wanted him to be with you or wanted him to want to be with you then, and that is somehow disqualifying. I guess I don't understand the logic there. Sometimes you break up with someone because they don't want what you want, and I don't think that people should engage in strategic breakups and create a lot of drama. But sometimes when you break up with someone, it brings them to their senses. They realize what they've lost, and they're suddenly willing to make the commitment to you that they weren't willing to make or didn't feel like they had to make when they had you previously on their own terms. So yeah, I do think you should give this guy another shot. You have great conversations. You have a great deal in common. There's a little bit of drama. There's a lot of drama in every long-term relationship. There's always going to be drama. There's always going to be conflict. I don't think you should take him back if he's a drama-generating, conflict-generating machine. Drama and conflict come. You don't want to be with somebody who makes that shit up, who gins it up, who cranks it up. But it'll come. So the fact that it's there isn't evidence that you shouldn't be in this relationship. You shouldn't be in this relationship, or any relationship. It's needlessly there if it's invented. But nothing you said about this guy disqualifies him in my reading or listening. Nothing disqualifies him. Good convos, a lot in common. I'm assuming you had good sex. You could picture a future before. And now, thanks to the breakup, thanks to that zap, thanks to that thunderbolt you threw, he can picture that future also now. So, yeah, date him again. See where it goes. Dating him again doesn't mean you have to commit to being with him for the rest of your life. If you begin to date him again and he begins to play these weasel games around commitment and exclusivity and not wanting what you want, then you can end it a second time.
Hi, I am a 21-year-old bisexual female in a relationship with a male for about a year and a half. And I guess I'd start off right off the bat, I'm a virgin. I will not have sex until married because my mom was very young when she had me, and I'm, you know, just scared of pregnancy. and I have never orgasmed, neither by myself or with a male, including my boyfriend. I have tried toys. I recently have tried lots of different toys. He has tried different things and nothing's working. And I don't know if it's because when I was younger, I was very sheltered and my parents, you know, I didn't have internet until I was 16, 17. So I don't know if that has an impact in it because I never had this time to be able to find myself and masturbate and figure out things. I'm also scared that it's going to be, I have to wait to have sex in order to have this orgasm. And that's not going to happen for a couple years. So, you know, I don't know if I should just stay calm and, you know, don't panic like I currently am. I should just stay calm and just, you know, ride the wave and wait for it to happen. Or if you have any advice for what I can do, because my libido has slowly, slowly dropped because I feel like I don't feel fulfilled after I masturbate or after we indulge in foreplay. It just feels like a waste of time. Like I could have been doing 10 other things while this happens. And I don't want that to be a hurt on our relationship. And I feel like, I don't know, I feel like I'm not doing what I should do. But if you have any advice, that'd be great.
Women were having orgasms before the internet was a thing. Early access to the internet, access to the internet in adolescence is not the linchpin. It's not what a woman or a girl needs in order to climax in young adulthood. Women were having orgasms before the internet was a thing. I'm not sure what to tell you. Your fears of pregnancy, rooted in your mother getting pregnant very early, seem a little irrational, considering there are IUDs and morning after pills, and even now, 2 years into the Trump administration and the Gorsuch Supreme Court, still access in most places to abortion. So you have options to prevent a pregnancy or terminate a pregnancy should you get pregnant. If you don't want to have vaginal intercourse for reasons and you want to wait until marriage to have vaginal intercourse for reasons, I support the choices that you want to make. I'm not trying to jimmy a dick into your twat for my own pleasure purposes because I take no pleasure and have no purpose in that exchange. But I think you need to sit with why you're really afraid or really reluctant or not yet ready for vaginal intercourse and what that means, because the reasons you cite, again, seem like a bit of a reach and a little too simple. And so maybe it is that you don't feel connected to the person that you're with, and so they're not the person that you wish to have this experience with for the first time, or something else. Something is up, and you need to explore and dive deep. And you are being sexual. You say you're a virgin. You're having foreplay. If you're attempting orgasms, if he's having orgasms and you guys are generating those orgasms together, you are having sex. You are being sexual. I would say that you're not a virgin, even if you have not yet had PIV, penis in vagina. My husband has not yet had PIV, and he is definitely not a virgin. A lot of women sometimes have a difficult time tapping into their orgasmic potential, in part because they aren't encouraged or made to feel entitled to masturbate in adolescence, in the same way that young men feel entitled to masturbate. And the culture kind of supports and encourages young men to masturbate by centering young male masturbation as a thing that young males do and not a thing that young ladies do and young women do. Often, masturbation is discussed as a male-only thing in terrible, terrible sex ed classes that young men and young women are herded into in high schools and middle schools. It is really important for a woman to know what it takes to get herself off, and that takes some exploration and that takes some doing. Something that most men don't remember from back when they first began masturbating, because it's so early in their lives, is that they masturbated for a long time without climaxing, that they stroked themselves and it felt good, or they humped a pillow and it felt good. And often what men will tell you, if they really think about when they began to masturbate, was that they were doing this thing regularly, stimulating themselves, pleasuring themselves. And then one day they were doing that thing and suddenly all this white gunk came flying out of their dicks and they were like, what the fuck was that? So they were engaged in self-pleasure for a long time before they had that first orgasm. So the fact that you are now engaging in self-pleasure and you've not yet had that first orgasm doesn't mean you're defective or broken. You are on your way. You are tiptoeing down the orgasmic brick road. And it might take a little while for you to figure out exactly what kind of stim or penetration or vibrator or fantasy play or whatever needs to be plugged in. And all those things need to be firing for you to climax, just like all those boys back when they were 12 or 13 years old were doing these things. And it took a while for everything to snap into place and for them to realize that if they do it in this particular way for this particular amount of time, with particular focus on this particular spot, they're going to come. So give yourself a break, smoke some pot, get a Hitachi magic wand, maybe get an IUD, calm the fuck down about pregnancy. You have options and give yourself a break. That's the most important part of that ramble, that rattle off for there at the end. Give yourself a break. Some women take some little time, takes them until they're 23, 24, 25 to really have that first orgasm, particularly if they didn't start exploring, doing a deep dive on self-pleasuring until they were 21. Although we have said on the show that bald men are sexy men, and they are, or you are, we also know that a lot of you would like to keep your hair for as long as you can. 66% of men start losing their hair by age 35. But you know what? When you start to notice hair loss, it's too late. It's easier to keep the hair you have than replace hair you've lost. Fortunately, there is a solution. ForHims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, and sexual wellness for men. They offer medical-grade solutions, real doctors offering well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions to help you keep your hair. It's not herbal supplements. Down with herbal supplements. Rather, it is prescription solutions backed by medical science. Up with science! Another benefit, you don't have to go to the doctor's office, so no waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. Save hours by going to forhims.com. You answer a few quick questions, the doctor will review and can prescribe to you. Then they mail your prescription directly to your door. Order now. My listeners get a trial month of everything you need to keep your hair for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. This would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy. Go to forhims.com/savage. That's forhims.com/savage. forhims.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I'm a Washington State native living in a more conservative East Coast city, and I'm going to a trade school, so there's all ages. I'm 24. One of my classmates is 19, and she just told me that she's pregnant. And I was like, wow, that's so exciting. Like, are you excited? And she was like, no, not really. But it's not, abortion is not an option for her. Her words, not mine. So I'm just wondering if I should let that decision be up to her and her family and her boyfriend. I mean, obviously it is, but if I should give her some, like, guidance as a strong woman friend, what would you suggest?
If someone said to me, abortion is not an option for me, I would say to them, why is that? I would ask a follow-up question. I would not dictate anything to them at that point. I wouldn't tell them what I thought they should do. I would just ask them how they arrived at that abortion is not an option for me position, particularly at 19 years old. And if it was religious hoo-ha, I would continue to draw them out. Often, though, what you'll hear from someone, particularly a young person who says something like abortion is not for me, if it's not religion and family, it's bad people have abortions. Abortion is a terrible thing that terrible people do. A lot of young people aren't aware of how common abortion is. 1 in 3 women have had an abortion, that most people who have abortions are already parents, already mothers, that abortion is safer than carrying a pregnancy to term, that it's not unsafe. Often people have these misconceptions, these prejudices about abortion because they've overheard adults lying about what abortion is, or they don't know the adults in their own life who've had abortions who are not terrible, rotten, awful people. That this 19-year-old came out to you or is telling people that she is pregnant and that it is an unhappy accident, she may be casting about for some input from people in her community outside of her boyfriend and immediate family, and framing it in a negative way, saying abortion is something I want, it's not anything I could ever do, but oh God, guys, hey, I'm pregnant. Here goes the flare up. I am pregnant, and it is not a good time for me to be pregnant, but I would never get an abortion because abortion's wrong, right? And sometimes what they need to hear is, no, abortion isn't wrong necessarily. Abortion is often the right choice for an individual person, and it was the right choice for me when blank, if you yourself have had an abortion, you can open up to her about your abortion. It is important, particularly for young people who may have been sheltered by their families or in their faith communities, to hear from other women about their abortion experiences. And that abortion can be a positive, affirming choice in a young person's life or a middle-aged person's life. And it needs to remain a legal choice. So she opened the door to this conversation when she told you that she was pregnant, when she told you it wasn't a great time for her to be pregnant, but she's going to go ahead with the pregnancy anyway because abortion isn't an option for her. You can explain using I statements. Don't tell her abortion is the choice that she must make, but explain to her why abortion is a choice that you have made, if indeed you've had an abortion, or a choice you would make for yourself if you were in a similar circumstance, and why. Could open her eyes. And there's nothing bullying or prescriptive about you sharing the choice that you would make in her circumstance. She shared with you the choice she, at the moment, intends to make in her circumstance. You can explain to her why you would make a different choice. Hey, everybody, I want to tell you about movement watches. Watches are one of those subtle style choices that really make your look. My husband looks super sharp in his Black Link movement watch. Movement has come far from being crowdfunded kids working out of a living room. In the past year, they've not only introduced a ton of new watch collections for both men and women, they've also expanded to sunglasses and fashion-forward bracelets for women. Movement watches are all about looking good and keeping it simple. MVMT watches don't tell you how many steps you've taken or blow your wrist up with text messages. They tell time, and they look good doing it, and you'll look good wearing it. Movement watches start at just $95. At a department store, you're looking at $400 to $500. Movement figured out that by selling online, they were able to cut out the middlemen and retail markup, providing the best possible price. With Movement watches, you'll get classic design, quality construction, and styled minimalism. Get 15% off today with free shipping and free returns by going to MVMT.com/savage. See why Movement keeps growing. Check out their expanding collection. Again, go to MVMT.com/savage and join the movement.
Hi, I'm a 50-year-old cisgender heterosexual male. I've been seeing my 40-year-old girlfriend for about a year and a half, and she now lives overseas, which has been challenging to see each other, but we see each other every 2 to 3 months. We have very frequent sex, like every 3 or 4 hours we have sex, the best sex I've ever had in my life. She starts to get really sore after like day 3. And even though she's still aroused and wants sex, once she has it, she's even more sore and she gets a bit resentful. So by day 7, you know, she's still doing it, but very sore and very uncomfortable. Is there anything that we can do to prevent this soreness? She's very naturally wet and doesn't need lubricant. So it's not like that's the problem, but it just, she just gets sore. Second thing is she's been proposing to make me experience what she experiences by pegging me every few hours or even once a day for the duration so I can get a sense of what she feels. Is that actually analogous? Like, is getting pegged in the ass actually analogous to having sex, vaginal sexual intercourse?
When I'm challenging straight boys about their very limited definition of what sex is, those straight boys who think sex is PIV, penis and vagina, vaginal intercourse, and anything that isn't PIV, anything that isn't their dick slamming in and out of that hole, a hand job, a blow job, mutual masturbation, rolling around, anything that isn't PIV is some sort of tragic consolation prize. I often tell these boys, if every time you consented to sex, and a lot of these boys bring this all up to me in the context of, why don't women put out the way men put out, the way gay men put out? My gay male friends have such an easy time getting laid. It's harder for straight guys. And I tell them, if every time you said yes to sex, your ass got fucked, you might say yes to sex a little less frequently than you would otherwise if there were options. So I kind of agree with your girlfriend here. If you are fucking her every couple of hours, every 3 or 4 hours, for days and days and days when you guys get together, she's going to be sore. and perhaps reluctant to say yes to the next PIV round. And maybe if you got fucked in the ass once or twice for every 3 or 4 hours for a week, you would understand why that's a problem. So I would encourage you, you know, if you don't want to get pegged, and I'm not into revenge pegging or sensitizing pegging. If pegging is a mutually pleasurable idea and both people want to experience that, I'm down. If pegging is about teaching someone a lesson, I think that's a bad place for pegging to come from. I think that that isn't pegging that should happen in the world. I don't think pegging, unless you're in a DS relationship, should be used as punishment. Rather, I would encourage you both, to fold some other activities into the PIV to give her poor pussy a break. That is what she's telling you when she says, look, maybe I should fuck your ass a few dozen times so you understand what I'm going through. It's possible that she is consenting to more PIV than she is comfortable having. I think it's not only possible, I think that's exactly what is happening here. You say it's entirely mutually consensual and you're both loving it. And she's saying, I am so sore, I'm ready to fucking fuck your ass to punish you. So maybe all those times that she's consenting to the PIV when you want it, she's giving it up for you. And it's not that hot for her after the first 10 or 11 times. So how about some mutual masturbation? How about some oral? How about some you going down on her for an hour and a half? How about some rolling around? How about some solo masturbation side by side while you make the fuck out? Give her pussy a break, and then maybe she won't be fantasizing about breaking your ass in half. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Hashtag Open, the dating app serving an inclusive community for sex-positive exploration. The team at Hashtag Open has been working hard getting ready for the initial beta version, and you can be part of it. Over 8,000 Savage Love listeners and Hump viewers have already signed up to test Hashtag Open's app. Hashtag Open respects your right to privacy and puts it first. They want to make sure that you have real control over your personal data from day one. To that end, they are forming a charitable trust that will have full ownership and control of all user data, ensuring that instead of being bought and sold to advertisers and third parties, it can only be used for the community and in support of Hashtag Open's mission to promote a safer sex-positive environment for all people. They put an emphasis on women and other marginalized populations through empirically driven research and education around gender identity, sexual orientation, and relationship styles. Hashtag Open is still looking for more Savage Love listeners to test their app before they come out to the rest of the world, earn community founder status for life, and don't forget that Hashtag Open is donating $1 to Planned Parenthood for every new profile in their app, up to $69,000. Check out their app and make a difference at the same time. Let me be me and you be you at Hashtag Open. Meet the Hashtag Open team and let them buy you a drink at the very best of Hump 2008 to 2017 in Portland on June 22nd. And 23rd.
Hey, Dan, I'm calling from Michigan. Last night, when my boys were visiting their dad for their weekly visit, I went into my 15-year-old son's room, and he's aware that it's open to random searches because we've had a few drug issues and tobacco issues in the past. So, and things come up missing. So I went in there, found some tobacco, some different vaping products. And then when I looked in a backpack, I found a personal pussy, a portable pussy, and he's 15. So, yeah, I get it. He's going to use stuff like that. I mean, I wish we had stuff like that when I was a kid. I mean, we just used our hands, but whatever. Anyway, my main concern is, where is he getting this stuff? I'm going to confront him about the tobacco, but do I say something to him about this personal pussy? And there was like some vibrating cock ring thing in there too. So I put it back in his backpack and put it back in the back of his closet. And I don't know what to do, Dan. Do I confront him about where is he getting these items? Or do I just let it go? I don't want him to feel ashamed. I don't want to embarrass him. I've already had the don't choke the chicken too hard conversation with him, so that it doesn't ruin his, you know, future relationship. So I could really use your help.
I was just sitting here thinking, aren't all pussies portable? I mean, almost all pussies, they're all portable. Your son has a particular kind of portable pussy. You gave him the talk about death grip syndrome. You gave him a talk about not masturbating so hard or with such a grip that when he transitions to partnered sex, he isn't then incapable of climaxing via the subtler sensations of pussy or butt or mouth. And he went and acquired for himself a simulated pussy, maybe to practice on, maybe to masturbate with instead of the death grip, because he was taking mom's advice. So mom, butt the fuck out, shut the fuck up, stay the fuck out of that particular backpack when you're searching his room. Don't say anything to him about the pussy. Don't say anything to him about the vibrating cock ring. I know you have these fantasies about some sort of Colombian sex toy ring gang, MS-13, selling pocket pussies to little straight boys in middle America. That is not where he got his hands on these sex toys. Either they were swiped from somebody else's house, somebody's dad's pocket pussy went missing and it changed hands 3 or 4 times at school, or, and I think this is much likelier, have you ever given your son an Amazon gift card or any sort of gift card? If you get on Amazon, you can find pocket pussies for sale and vibrating cock rings and handcuffs and tit clamps and all sorts of other sex toys. And if you have an Amazon gift card, as so many teenagers do, you can order these things and have them delivered to your house. And all you got to do then is make sure that you intercept that package first. Or if you don't want to have them come to your house, if mom's always there on the porch when the packages arrive, you can send them to somebody else's house, to a friend's house, where that friend is always there when the package arrives, and mom is never home when the package arrives, or dad is never home when the package arrives. There is a way for your son to get his hands, for everybody's kids, to get their hands on sex toys now without having to go down to that street corner downtown where the Colombian sex toy lord gang sells pocket pussies to innocent 15-year-old boys who wouldn't be able to access pocket pussies otherwise. That's not how this is going down, mom. Got it from a friend, ordered it from Amazon with the gift card his grandparents gave him. That's how he got those masturbatory aids. Stay the fuck out of your kids' masturbatory routines. You give him advice. You gave him some good advice and gave my advice. I appreciate that. That's good advice, I think. That's why I give it all the time. Then you butt the fuck out. So, mom, don't bring up the pocket pussy. You can discuss the tobacco. You can discuss drugs. Yep. If you have a deal with your kid where you can search his room because of past infractions, search his room for the things that are infraction related, like drugs, like tobacco. That pocket pussy, not in any way infraction related. Leave it alone.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 29-year-old gay guy living in Seattle. Lived in the city for a long time. About 3 years ago, I quit drinking, and so that means I don't hang out in the gay bar scene anymore. I've tried, and people, when they get about 2 drinks in them, that's when I either have to start like taking care of them, or they just become kind of annoying. So I stopped doing that. My question is, where do I meet gay guys or gay queer people in general and have like a sense of community? How do I build that outside of the bar scene? You know, gay male culture seems to be so, it's like the bars are the magnets and you know, that's just where everybody gathers. And I kind of miss that. But at the same time, I can't really participate in it. You know, that raises the whole question. Let's say if I hook up with somebody at a bar, I don't drink, they drink, you know, that means that like I'm technically taking advantage of them. If somebody doesn't remember consenting the next day, then it is rape. And I understand that. And I find it like repulsive. And so I don't want to partake in that.
If the only place you're looking for connection with other gay men is in bars, then the only place you're going to find those men is in bars where most people, but not all people, are drinking. You go to the bars, it sounds like, from time to time. You don't drink. So not everyone in the bar drinks. You're there. Look around. Who else is nursing a club soda and lime? I'm one of those people nursing a club soda and lime when I'm in a bar because I hardly drink at all anymore. But get out of the bars. There are gay political organizations, gay social clubs, gay sports organizations, gay kink organizations. There are all sorts of organizations and clubs. There's a gay skiing and snowboarding club. There are all sorts of organizations, social, political, religious, and otherwise, for gay people. If you don't like what you're finding in the bars, don't go to the bars. You have options outside the bars. Yes, the bars are a gathering place, but they're a less important one, actually, as time has gone on. There are fewer and fewer gay bars, in part because of dating apps. We all used to go to the gay bars because that's where we found each other. That was the space, the only space we could enter where gayness or bi-ness was the assumption and the norm. And now we have computers and phones and apps and dating sites and Scruff and Grindr and Squirt and Recon and whatever else. We have all of those spaces that we can enter virtually as well, and the bars have become less central. In the bars, though, if you are going to go to the bars, there are going to be other people there who are drinking moderately, drinking not at all. It is possible to go home with someone who's had a couple of drinks and not rape them. If going home with someone who's had a couple of drinks means you raped that person, then most of the sex that happens on any given Saturday night in the United States is rape or sexual assault, and I just don't think that's true. There is a line past which consent is not meaningful, where someone is so drunk that they can't offer you their meaningful consent. That someone dipped their finger in a drink doesn't render them incapable of offering you their meaningful consent. And I would hope that you, as a stone-cold sober person, in that moment, meeting someone at a bar who's had a couple of drinks, you are in a really good position to assess whether someone is merely tipsy, just had a couple, or so obliterated, if attractive, that tonight's not the night that you should go home with them or invite them home with you. That maybe tonight's the night where you swap phone numbers and you text them tomorrow. But don't be one of those people who goes to the bars all the time to complain about the bars and goes to the bars all the time to complain about how the bars are the only place that you can go to meet other gay men, because that's just not true. The bars are perhaps the most easy and obvious place to go. They require no advance planning. If you want to get involved with the gay skiing and snowboarding club, you're going to have to get in touch. You're going to have to find out when their events are, when the meetups are, and go to them before you go on your first snowboarding adventure, as opposed to just rolling into the bar when the door is open, which is easy. So you're going to have to make an effort to meet gay men and find gay men and find gay community and find gay culture outside the bars. But it is possible to do.
Hi, Dan, Nancy, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. I was calling, Dan, to find out if you could give me your insight into this rather uncomfortable place I find myself. Last weekend, I got a text from my father that said, "Mom found an earring in the hot tub. It's not yours, but if she asks, please say it is, and I'll explain it to you in person. I appreciate your help in this deception, but it is the best thing to do. Heart." And a picture of the earring. "Okay?" question mark. I said, "Okay." Then I thought about it, and I responded, "Rewind, I do want more info, and I don't want to be in the middle of this. Without any judgment of what's going on, we're all human, I am uncomfortable lying about this. I value a good relationship with each of you, and that means I don't want to be involved in the deception." He then said, "Okay, no problem. A friend left it. I thought it was easier to have it never happen. It's not a crisis. I just wanted to avoid something misunderstandable. Forget I ever asked." And I said, "Okay." And then he came back and said, "Okay, the mystery's resolved. No deception. Totally forget I ever mentioned it." And I'm having a hard time forgetting that it was ever mentioned. And when I saw my mom recently, I felt different towards her. And I felt like I had the secret. And there's so many things that are wrong about this, in the sense that I never should have been contacted or dragged into it. And also this feeling of, I wish it could be forgotten and unsaid, but it's not. My parents have been together for 40 some years. So I'm just wondering what to do with this. Like, how do I hold this when I feel like I've lost a little bit of respect, maybe for both of them? Because I'm assuming that my mom is happy to believe whatever story he gave and continue with some sort of head in the sand style.
In this line of work, you sometimes hear from people whose moms or dads turned a blind eye to abuse, to sexual abuse or physical abuse, because recognizing it, because admitting to others that they saw it or that it happened, would require them to upend their lives, would require them to leave the shitty second husband, or divorce the shitty first wife who's emotionally or physically abusive. And so they pretend it's not happening, pretend not to see it, and gaslight their kids. This is incredibly traumatizing. This destroys relationships. It destroys people. This ain't that. This is mom and dad together 40 years. You have no idea what's going on in their relationship sexually. You have no idea whether your parents still have a sexual connection at all. And your mom maybe wants to turn a blind eye because to see it, to recognize it, to name it, to discuss it with each other or with their kids would leave them in a position where they felt like they had to turn their lives upside down. Sometimes in a long ass term relationship, people change, and sometimes they change in ways where they must part ways. And sometimes people change in ways where accommodations are made. Best case scenario, the accommodations are discussed. The accommodations are made as an active, mutually agreed to choice, and both people have buy-in. Sometimes the accommodations are made in silence. Sometimes the accommodations are made at the margins because somebody is, if you're listening to the show, somebody is doing what they need to do to stay married and stay sane. Sometimes people do what they need to do to stay married and stay sane, and the other person in the marriage knows they're doing that. And they appreciate not being involved in the decision, not being told. They appreciate being able to live in a kind of a gray zone where they can suspend their disbelief. And they appreciate, consciously or subconsciously, articulated or not articulated, the effort their partner goes to protect them from the truth. For all you know, that's the case in your parents' marriage. 40 years they've been together. A lot of relationships of 3, 4, sometimes 2 decades, the sex is gone. And one person unilaterally ended the sexual element of the relationship. And the other person is put in a position where they can get their needs met discreetly or not so discreetly if they're dragging people home and dropping them in the hot tub at the ranch and stay in the relationship, stay in the marriage. Every marriage is a mystery to everyone who's not a part of it. It's awful the position your father put you in because now you know just enough about what's going on inside their marriage that you feel complicit. You feel involved. And I want to absolve you. I want to say you're actually not involved. I want to encourage you to stuff this down the memory hole. You can, if you're concerned that your mother is being abused or gaslit or is miserable, knows she's being lied to and is just keeping the peace because she thinks everybody else thinks their marriage is perfect and fine, but she would like out at 40 years, have a conversation with your mother just broadly and generally about her, dad, whether they're happy, whether she's happy, your concern for her. Do you want her to have a wonderful, fulfilling life even now? And touch base. And you can touch base with your fucking father too, who should never have involved you in this way. And tell him that that was not okay. And you've been left feeling really concerned for your mother. But then, be forewarned, you start pulling those threads, you're likely to find out even more about your parents' marriage that may leave you feeling more uncomfortable or more involved. You ask your dad, like, what was up with that earring? What was up with that other woman in your hot tub? What the fuck are you doing? Are you cheating on mom? And your dad turns to you and says, 20 years ago, your mother told me she was done with sex. I haven't had sex for 15 years. I haven't had sex for 18 years. I met somebody in a similar circumstance. We meet each other's needs so we can each stay in our own marriages and continue to love and support the people that we are with for the long haul, but that the sexual element of those relationships have died. So yeah, I'm having sex with somebody else. And your mother doesn't know. Then what are you going to do with that? Would your mother want to know? Esther Perel in The State of Affairs, Rethinking Infidelity, writes about the burden of knowing. When you know somebody is having an affair and you feel this impulse to go tell the person who's being cheated on, you are giving them the burden of knowing. Not everybody wants to know or needs to know or will benefit from knowing. What if your mother at 40 years into this marriage is physically dependent on your father for care? And then she knows and feels compelled to go. And your father, despite this small carve-out, is a decent and loving and caring husband. And of course, when somebody's cheating, everybody wants to round that person up to monster. who never loved the person that they cheated on. Otherwise, you couldn't do that. Sometimes people cheat to stay. Sometimes people do what they need to do to stay married and stay sane because it is not in their best interest, but also or exclusively in the best interest of the partner who is the victim of the cheating. You really need to think all this shit through. Convo with your mom about her life, whether she's happy, see where it goes. And risk a more specific convo with your dad about how unfair that was and how it's left you wondering and left you feeling very concerned for your mom, for their marriage. And then brace yourself for what you're likely to hear.
This is For the Caller in episode 605 with the obnoxiously snoopy mother. If you must take the coward's way, you could always have a family dinner at your mother's house, bar over a computer, and log them out yourself. Just a thought.
Hey, Dan. I'm a transgender man, and I'm calling in response to episode 605. There was a lesbian that called in, and, you know, she didn't want to sleep with transgender women with a penis. I actually, like, kind of agree with your point, like, you know, because personally I don't want people sleeping with me if they don't like my genital configuration, but that's not why I'm calling. I think that your point was fine, but I think you might have missed a key vignette of information on there. She had said she's more than willing to sleep with transgender men that don't have penises yet, or like cis women who don't have penises. And that's great. That might be her thing, but that might be why her friends are picking up and calling her like trans misogynist and like being bigoted about things. There's kind of a history of lesbians who want to date us trans men who don't see us as men, especially when we're like beginning our transition and it's a little more ambiguous. And that it's kind of like, you know, one of the situations where they look at us and they're like, well, you're not really a man. You're just a really butch woman. I've never gotten so many like women hitting on me from the lesbian community as when I started taking tea in that first year. So that's kind of a thing. And it's kind of a crappy thing because it's a way to undermine your gender for real. And, you know, they might be sensing, her friends might be sensing that and also thinking with a more expanded conversation from her that she doesn't really see transgender women as women either. For her, the gender might be reduced down to sexual genital characteristics, and she's just not really grasping the difference that your junk is not your gender. So I think your answer was fine, but I think that there should have been maybe hopefully a little more exploration in like why a lesbian would even want to sleep with a transgender man because they're men.
Hi, this is a call in relation to episode 605, the caller who was looking for a quiet bed to have some interesting sex on. And I highly recommend a latex mattress. They're nice and springy. They've got a lot of good bounce. But because they don't have actual springs in them, there's no creaking at all, provided, of course, that you have a good solid frame underneath it. Good luck and happy fucking.
Before we leave it, I want to let you know that I am working on a new project with an award-winning documentary team that aims to break down stereotypes and stigmas by showcasing real couples therapy with real couples. You know, when we're struggling in relationships with our issues, sometimes we feel like our issues are ours alone and no one else could understand because no one else is going through what we're going through. But lots of us go through the same shit. We just don't know it because we don't talk about the shit that we're going through. This is the show that's going to talk about the shit we're going through. I'm a fan of the filmmakers behind the project, and right now they are looking for more couples to be featured in this documentary series. So if you are looking for couples therapy and you are in the New York City area, check it out at couplestherapydocumentary.com. It's selected for the series. You would get 20 weeks of free therapy with an expert couples therapist, and by sharing your story, you might help others wrestling with similar challenges in their own relationships. To find out more, again, go to couplestherapydocumentary.com. All right, there we're going to leave it. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. Follow me on Twitter at @FakeDanSavage. Follow Evan Urquhart on Twitter at @E_URQ. Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.